91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Like to hazard a guess as to how many times the average American moves in a lifetime? That's the question which roused journalist Melanie Warnick to write, "This is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live." The answer to the question, 11.5 moves. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. What makes a person put down roots and want to stay? Some locales stimulate a deep connection while others bring discontent. We have both movers and stayers. Some 2 million people relocate more than 500 miles and most make the switch in the summer. But there's a spreading movement of placemaking, a term for how citizens make their communities more livable. We'll discuss it this hour with your input after the news.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Bonnie, thanks for filling in or soloing while I was gone on vacation.
Oh, pleasure. Missed you.
And appropriate enough for today's program, I went home to my boyhood home, drove by the old house to see what people have done to it over the last 40 years or so, and was back where I grew up.
Wow.
Kind of fun.
Just like we're going to talk about today. Did you want to move back?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
It's awfully cold there, for one thing. Well, have you ever considered why one person cherishes a community while others detest it? And what facets of a hometown makes it most desirable?
Today we discuss these matters and more with journalist Melody Warnick. She grew up in the same house for her first 18 years, but has since lived in six other locales, and that made her wonder about the moves.
She's written the book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live.
How do you feel about the place where you live? Do you want to move, and can you raise your appreciation for what you now call home and learn to love it?
Melody Warnick now joins us from WVTF Public Radio in Roanoke, Virginia, which is just 41 miles from her adopted home of Blacksburg. Welcome. That's the sixth residence, right, Melody?
It's the sixth residence and the fifth state that I've lived in as an adult. So, yeah, I have a problem.
Well, I was going to ask you this later, but since you just said the fifth state you lived in, I can understand that you haven't been to Alaska, but why haven't you been of the 50 states to Alaska, Connecticut, and Rhode Island? That's so strange.
I'm actually going to Alaska this summer on a cruise, which I'm really excited for. Connecticut and Rhode Island, I really have no excuse. I've done most of the Northeast. In fact, I went to Maine and Vermont as part of research for this book and somehow just never quite made it there. But I'm planning to remedy that soon.
Okay.
I apologize to all the residents.
Or those who were born there.
Yes.
So, Melody, your book reminded me so much of that Stephen Stills song, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. So
right.
Evidently, you know what that means firsthand, to learn to love the place you're in. You've learned to do that now. So tell us a little about you and how you came to be interested in the project.
Well, I've lived in Blacksburg, Virginia for about 4 years now. But before we lived here, we lived in Austin, Texas for 2 years. And Austin is a town that inspires a lot of devotion and excitement among people who have lived there and often people who have just heard of it. When I mention Austin to people in Virginia and elsewhere, they always say, Austin, I've heard that's a great town. And that is exactly what we heard, too, before we moved there. But after we had been there for a little while, my husband really struggled with the heat. The traffic was a big change for us. We were coming from a small town in Iowa, and we couldn't quite understand why it wasn't working as well for us as it was for a lot of our friends who were deeply in love with the city and felt really connected to it. My husband ended up getting a job offer in Blacksburg, Virginia, which is where Virginia Tech University is. So we moved, again, with high hopes that this new place would answer all our problems and be the wonderful Shangri-La that we had always been dreaming of. And again, once we got there, we realized, oh, this town isn't perfect. We kept waiting to find some perfect magical place, and it just wasn't happening. So it forced me to consider the idea that maybe there wasn't a perfect city, and maybe what needed to happen was to simply change the way I approached my city, to think differently about it in a way that increased my sense of being at home, my sense of belonging in a place, even if I hadn't been there very long.
Well, certainly your occupation dictates quite a bit of your moving. If you want to be an actor or actress, you're not going to maybe stay in Peoria.
Absolutely. And that's part of the problem, is that often people have to live in cities that were not on their dream list of cities because they have a job there, right, or because their parents live there, and maybe it's that time of life when you need to move home and help care for elderly parents. There's lots of different reasons we live in the places we do beyond thinking that this is your dream location. So I think for most Americans, and many of us do move every year, about 12% of the population of the country moves every year, which is about 36 million people. So imagine the population of the 25 biggest cities in the country just, you know, packing up the boxes and relocating. Many of us are in places that we didn't imagine ourselves being, for whatever reason, and it makes sense that we need to think more about our places and how to feel engaged and connected and happier where we are. So that's kind of the idea of the book, is me learning to do that myself in my adopted town of Blacksburg and creating a roadmap for other people to do that in the towns where they are.
Melody, did you discover why Americans move more than, say, other nationalities?
I think it's cultural. I think we have created a culture of kind of restlessness and a bit of nomadism that most of us have the idea now, especially younger people, millennials, have the idea that the way to move up the job ladder is by moving. You don't stay at the same company for years and years. You switch companies, and oftentimes a switch to a new job requires a geographic move. I also think that people, to some extent, want to experience more of the country. I know that was the same for me. Having grown up, as you mentioned, in the same house in Southern California for the first 18 years of my life, by the time I was an adult and I was married, I was a little eager to get out and experience things. You know, my husband and I graduated from college and we moved across the country to Silver Spring, Maryland. And we had never lived east of the Mississippi, and it felt like a grand adventure. I think there's some, to some extent, that's desirable for Americans. But there does come a point, and especially, you know, after you've done this a few times or when you have children, where you may recognize that the better thing for your family or for you is to put down some roots, at least for a while.
The subtitle of your book, explain that. How is loving where we live an art and a science?
Well, the interesting thing is, after I moved to Blacksburg and I started thinking about this topic, how do people come to feel at home where they live? What has to happen to achieve that? I started doing some research about it, just kind of the old-fashioned, looking at studies, and I realized that this was something that was actually in the scientific literature. It's called place attachment. And researchers study place attachment to gauge how connected people feel in their towns. It's very much an emotional thing. It's a little hard to quantify. So when scientists are looking at this, they might ask study participants questions like, Do you feel like this is the best place for you? Or when things are happening in your town, do you want to be involved? Do you care about the future success of your city? They'll ask people to, you know, rate their agreement with statements like, I would never move anywhere else. This town provides the things that I need, or the relationships that make me happy. So there are it is actually a measurable thing that scientists look at, the sense of place attachment, which I kind of describe as a sense of being at home or a sense of belonging in your particular place. How much do you love it where you live? And I learned that place attachment, it's kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling. It makes you feel good. But it also has some actual physical, measurable benefits in terms of happiness. It increases your well-being when you're content where you are. There was one study by a researcher at the University of Virginia that found they studied elderly people in a community in Japan and found that women who felt connected to their neighborhood and felt connected to their neighbors as well, liked the people who lived around them, lived longer, sometimes by as much as 5 years, than people who lived in those places and didn't feel as connected. So it actually matters to our health and our happiness that we have this sense of connection.
How about geography? Getting aside, say, familial requirements or job, if you can choose where you want to live. It seemed like we had a guest, in fact, a colleague who wrote a book about geography and happiness, Eric Weiner, who said that people in Iowa who think they'll be happier if they move to California almost never are.
Right. There are some places that quantifiably are happier than other places. Gallup does community well-being studies every year, and I know rankings change a little from year to year, but recently there might be as much of a difference as 8 or 9 percentage points between the highest, happiest state, which I think was Hawaii when I looked at it, not surprisingly, and the state with the lowest levels of well-being, which was Kentucky. So states like West Virginia tend to do poorly on these well-being surveys, and states like Colorado tend to do well. But I think even when you're looking at those statistics, and there's so many, you know, best places studies every week, magazine or an online publication will roll out a new list of the top 10 places to raise your children or the top 10 places to retire wealthy. I got that one in email today. But I find that place is a lot more complex than simply looking at a list and finding, you know, the place that supposedly is going to make you happy and moving there. Early on, as I researched this book, I was working on another project, a magazine article for Reader's Digest that took me to this little tiny town in West Virginia called Laredo. And I met a woman there named Gertie Moore, who, it turned out, had lived in this community of, you know, a few hundred people her entire life. She'd, you know, was born in the house at the top of the street, and it slowly moved down toward the highway, but she had never moved away despite some horrific tragedies. The reason I had gone there was because this was the site of a terrible flood that had killed 130 people 40 years ago. And Laredo, West Virginia is not a place that I would want to live, or maybe most of us would want to live. It's, you know, a remote area of West Virginia. It's a hard scrabble life to some extent. But Gertie Moore, who is in her 70s now, she is the queen of this town. She knows everyone. Her family lives nearby. She has created a really happy life for herself, not because her place is quantifiably, objectively the best place, but because she has invested so much. She has committed so much to it, and it has become a great place for her to live just because of how she thinks about it. It's the place that she loves. It's home for her.
Well, we're speaking with Melanie Warnick about her book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. And we're going to take a short break on today's Topical Currents. When we come back, we'll open the phones for your calls and your emails. Stay with us.
and think to yourself, there's no place like home. There's no place like home.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Are you clicking your heels, Joe?
Are you dreaming? Ooh.
From, of course, The Wizard of Oz, Judy Garland. We're back with Melody Warnick. She's a freelance journalist. Her work has appeared in several publications, including The Atlantic's City Lab, Reader's Digest, Lady's Home Journal, many more. She's written This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving, The Place You Live. If you want to join in the conversation,
call us at 1-800-743-9576. We promised we'd have some callers on. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email radio@WLRN.org.
So, Melody, what I wanted to know, you said there were benefits, emotional and health benefits, to loving the place you live. What are the detriments to hating the place you live in?
I think it's more like a physical and emotional reaction to it. I think when you don't like the place you live in, it feels all-encompassing. It can make everything else in your life feel like it's not working well for you. And the interesting thing about not liking the place you live in is it can happen almost anywhere.
Right.
Like I said earlier, having been in Austin, and I did like Austin, but it maybe didn't click as well for me as it does for a lot of other people. But any city that you go to in America, you can find people who are rabid fans of that city and would never consider moving anywhere else. And you can also find people who just hate it. And I think when you have that feeling of, ugh, this city that I'm stuck in, it can color almost everything else in your life and make everything else feel like it's just not going very well for you. Because place is, we kind of take it for granted sometimes. We may not think that much about our town. It's just the place we ended up. But place is the background, it's the setting of everything that's going on in your life at any given moment. You know, think of the people who are your friends or the partner you ended up marrying. These are the results of place, the job that you have. It's in a particular place most of the time. So I think that when you really dislike a place, that's not an emotion that you should just brush under the rug. It's something you need to deal with. And I feel like you can. That was one of the interesting things I concluded about place attachment is sometimes it happens instantly for people. They just feel drawn to a particular city or they move someplace and it just feels like home right away. But mm-hmm. I think more likely for most of us is it's something that we have to work at a little. And so that's what I had to do in Blacksburg. It wasn't a perfect fit right away. And it was not an instant, you know, meet cute, falling in love right away situation. And I had to do experiments. Love where you live experiments is what I call them in the book. Little actions that can produce those feelings of place attachment over time.
Working at it is something I was thinking about before you uttered the phrase. Here in South Florida, in particular, with the diversity of our community, if you work at it a little bit and you come to embrace the different cuisines and the different festivals and don't mind that everywhere you go, English isn't going to be spoken, you get along. If you don't, if you get away from that and feel isolated, then you want to move.
Right. And I love that you mention food and festivals, because those are among the things that make a difference in how we feel about our place. You know, think of food. We connect food to locations. So many cities across the country have a food that jumps to mind when you think of it. You know, you think of Philadelphia and you think of cheesesteaks, or you think of Baltimore and you think of, you know, crab or things like that. So if you find the local food that your city is really good at and embrace it and learn to appreciate it, it can help you feel more connected, more rooted where you are. Festivals are a good one, too, because a lot of being in your place and being happy in your place is learning to do what your town is good at. And it's not the same everywhere. I grew up in Southern California, which is a theme park mecca. I lived in the town just north of Anaheim where Disneyland is, and grew up going to Disneyland and other places like that. It's the kind of place where tourists go on vacation. And I know a lot of Florida is like that too. But what happens when you move to the little town in Iowa or Nebraska that it does not have Disneyland? And you can either regret that and feel awful for yourself that you don't live close enough to do those amazing things that you once did, or you can figure out what your town excels at. And it might be something that seems kind of silly at first. It may be that your town has a fantastic library, or they have a good, you know, a community orchestra, or they have a festival every year, and most towns do. Participating in things like that, even if they don't seem at first like something that you want to do in particular, can make you feel connected to where you live. My town, Blacksburg, like I said, is the home of Virginia Tech, and the football team is the Hokies. So if you live in Blacksburg, you have to be a Hokie fan. It is required. You have to, you know, basically sign your name agreeing to do this. And my problem moving there is I just don't care that much about football, which I know is a cardinal sin for a lot of people. But there it is. I just didn't care that much about sports in general. But over the time that I've been in Blacksburg, I've trained myself to like Hokie football. I don't care about football in general, but I like Hokie football. And I've gone to a few games, and I've bought the T-shirts, and, you know, I know the cheers now. And that's a silly thing, but in some ways, sports fandom bears a lot of resemblance to place fandom. It's that feeling of, you know, this is my team, and we are winning this game, and we wear the T-shirt and we talk about it to our friends. That same thing that motivates people to root for their sports team, which is often based in, you know, love for a city, can translate to the emotions we feel about the place we live. We root for it. We cheer it on. We want it to succeed. And we feel like we're on the team.
I'm just wondering, you mentioned Virginia Tech, and that brings to mind the tragedy that happened there, and now I'm thinking of Orlando. I'm wondering how a tragedy in a town can serve to bond a community. We know that it can, but are there also many people who leave a place after a disaster like that?
There are people that leave a place after a disaster. I moved to Blacksburg several years after the shooting that happened there. And so for a long time, I felt like it wasn't my tragedy. I didn't totally understand the emotions behind it. And one of the things that I did as part of this project and loving where I lived was learning more about it and trying to feel those emotions, share those emotions of the people who live there. There are studies that show that after disasters, some people, and this includes shooting, but also natural disasters,
right,
some people do leave a community and don't come back. And that's not always a bad thing. But in other cases, we've seen that disasters and tragedies in cities can bring people closer together. There was research after Hurricane Sandy that more neighbors got or more residents who were affected got help from their neighbors than got help from the government, and that the communities that recovered fastest were the ones who had the strongest social networks before and after the storm. So when bad things happen in communities, I think it it should bring people together. And you're seeing that with Orlando. You're seeing the T-shirts that people are wearing. You know, we are Orlando. Mm-hmm. People want to identify with this community and support it. So I think that can happen and should.
We're speaking with Melody Warnick about her book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. We have lots of calls and emails, and we'll get to them after this short break.
And we're back with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and journalist Melody Warnick. She's the author of This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. Bonnie, we have an emailer.
We do. Ivan, I've been in Miami since 1991, originally from the Northeast. It's been a love-hate relationship for the last 20 years. I've been trying to leave here ever since, but married a local girl and had two kids and bought a house. Honestly, I dislike Miami because of the heat and the high crime, but I've learned to make adjustments and accept and adapt to where I live. But any chance I get to move somewhere cooler and safer, I would go at the drop of a hat. Any suggestions on how to further cope with this and not drive my family crazy with my complaints? That's Bob, actually.
That is a great question.
It is.
Because that is one of the main challenges of place, is that we don't always want to be in the same place as the people that we're connected to and that we're tied to. One suggestion is to remember that the number one thing that makes people unlikely to move, so most committed to their place, is having relatives nearby. A study from Pew Research Center found that people who live within an hour's drive of six members of their family are the least likely to pick up and move. So something to feel happy about. You're there, you're with your family, you're doing this thing together. So hopefully that will put it in perspective.
But what about the things you hate about a place, like traffic or the heat or the crime? Or how do you get over that?
So there are things about a place, any place that you live, that you just can't change. Traffic and weather are top of the list. I have a chapter in the book about walking, and one of the takeaways from that chapter is how unhappy commuting makes people, stresses them out as much as, you know, being in combat sometimes. So I think there are things that you can do to improve your life where you live. For instance, if you have a long commute and it's making you miserable, try and move closer to your work, which I know is easier said than done. I talked to someone for the book who lived in Seattle, and her husband had a 4-mile commute that was turning into an hour and a half every day because the traffic was so bad. And she said, I realized it just wasn't worth it, and we broke the lease on our apartment, and we moved closer, and everyone feels better about it now. But if you're in a situation where you can't do that, I think one of the best things you can do is make more of a point of focusing on the things that you do enjoy. The stuff that you hate is probably going to be there, especially the big stuff. You know, you just can't change it. And unless you are willing to pick up and move to another town, which sometimes happens, you just have to learn to cope with it. But I think a good way to cope with it is by focusing on the things that you do love. So you'll always hate the heat, but maybe you love winter time. You'll always hate the traffic, but maybe you love the big festival in town, or you love all the restaurants. These are trade-offs.
Or the ocean.
Right, exactly. When we lived in Austin, those were probably our two biggest complaints, traffic and heat. And they were things that, you know, we couldn't do about anything about. We couldn't change. But there definitely were moments in, you know, February when I was sitting out on my back porch reading a book and thinking of all my friends in Iowa who were still, you know, in their 15 layers of snow gear, where I had that moment of, this is not too bad. This is pretty great. So it is a tough thing, and families have to compromise about this. And maybe there will come a day when they can find more of a happy medium between North and South. But in the meantime, I think focusing on those things that make your city pleasant for you right now helps change your mindset. One thing I learned as I researched this book is that your town is what you think it is, which sounds like a hocus pocus sort of statement, but basically stating there is no true definition of your town. It's just how you think about it. And if you can find little tricks to change your mindset, you'll be happier.
Let's take a call or two, as promised. Teresa in Del Rey. Hi.
Hi. I am originally from Virginia, and I moved after I graduated from UVA. I'm a Cavalier. And I moved to New York. And I have lived, a lot of it was local, but I have moved over 25 times.
Oh.
a lot of it was, you know, New York. The first year I lived in New York, I moved like 5 times. And it's been kind of an experience since then. And I've been back and forth between New York and Florida. I finally feel like I'm settled where I am in Del Rey. But it's just been, you know, it's been finding the right place. And I think I kept living in New York because I was trying to prove something to myself and to people. But, you know, when I decided I was going to let that go and pick the place that was really comfortable for me, then I chose this.
Like we lost her. Teresa.
You still there, Teresa?
No,
well,
she's not.
I love that story.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she's a Cavalier.
are they arch enemies with the,
yes,
with
that's
the
what
Hokies?
I've heard.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the University of Virginia. So we're supposed to fight or something. But I love what she's saying about, you know, going to New York and, you know, spending your time there and enjoying it, and then eventually finding a place where you feel a little more at home. Settling in a place and putting down roots doesn't mean that you are going to stay there forever. That's one of the things that really surprised me about place attachment. As part of research for the book, I went to Fargo, North Dakota, which is a town that it may surprise you, but has a lot of feelings of place attachment right now. There's a lot of local people and millennials especially who are doing a lot of interesting things there to make the town really interesting and attractive to outsiders. And one of the people who's leading this charge is a guy named Greg Tavine. And he is a local, you know, from generations back, and has really committed to making Fargo a better place to live by, you know, sponsoring TEDx conferences and working with local entrepreneurs and things like that. And I asked him, so this is it for you, right? Like, this is the place that you're going to be for the rest of your life? And he was shocked. He said, no, you know, I'll be here for maybe the next 10 years or so, and then I'll probably move somewhere else. And I said, well, I thought that was the whole point of this, you know, of putting down roots somewhere and making your town better. It's the whole point of it is that you're going to stay. But he said, you know, this is the place that I love to be right now, but it may not always be, and there will be other opportunities elsewhere. And it took me a while to wrap my brain around it, because I think I really had equated place attachment and putting down roots with staying forever. You know, that if you're rooted, you're a stayer and you're not going to move anymore. This, you found your place. But what I've learned, especially in talking to people, is that a city that works really well for you for a certain amount of time may not work well for you forever. So maybe you found the town that was a great place to raise your kids, and now that you're an empty nester, the town's not working quite as well for you. Or, you know, as a retiree, maybe you retired somewhere and you loved it for 10 years and now you don't. Place attachment actually peaks after, you know, 5 years after you move someplace, and then it can slowly start to decline. I think there are ways to reverse that decline and things that you can do to engage more in your town. But I'm not anti-moving. I think that for some people, moving is the right answer. There might be a place that's a better fit for you.
I mean, some people just have wanderlust. Okay.
And next up, we have Bob. Bob's in Coral Gables, the city beautiful. Hi.
Oh, it's Coral Springs. Coral Springs.
Oh, forgive me.
That's all right. Both great towns. My wife and I are stayers. We really think that the next move for us is going to be with 10 toes up.
Oh, I guess it's a forever. Coral Springs is your forever home.
Yes, it is. And when we moved here 26 years ago, we were like in our mid 50s. And we says, you know, we want to get someplace where, as we age, that services will be nearby. I mean, we have doctors, and of course the post office and the bus system, and everything is right within walking distance. And we're here to stay. We love it, and it's a beautiful life. And I think people who are in their middle ages, who are considering moving, ought to think long term. As far as, you know, moving to the mountains might be nice, but in the mountains, are you going to, you know, if you can't drive anymore, are you stranded or what? You know.
Yeah, but then,
exactly. But
Melody, what about, you know, the interim moves? That's okay too for some people, right?
I feel personally, it makes me a little depressed when I see people moving around a lot in retirement. Some people have waited their whole lives for this. This is the moment when they can finally get to that dream destination. But it pains me a little because I think of all the social capital that people build in the places they've lived for a while, all the friendships they've made, the, you know, investments in terms of volunteering and spending time on things. And sometimes people underestimate that when you move, you are leaving all that behind. You are leaving not just the place, but all the relationships and, you know, perhaps the recognition, the involvement. So I love this idea of thinking long term when you move. You're thinking about where you can age in place, what's going to work for you, not just now and for the next 5 years, but 20 years from now. Again, like I said, I'm not against moving totally. And so sometimes there are intermediate moves. Maybe your kids have grown and you move to be closer to your parents who are aging. And then later you might move to a different place that works a little better as you age. And that's fine, but I think I love that idea of finding your forever town if you can. Not everyone can find it, but if you're in Coral Springs and this is the place for you, that is great. That means you are really attached, and you can hear how happy Bob is. You know,
absolutely.
He seems committed. He's committed. He wants to talk about his town, and he just feels like he made a good choice, and that makes you happy. You're really connected to your place, and that's a great thing.
We're speaking with Melody Warnick about her book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. We ask our callers just to be patient. We'll get to you right after this break.
And we're back with today's Topical Currents, Monday edition. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and journalist Melody Warnick. She's talking about the book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. Back to our callers. We have, Barbara in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good.
I'm a little hoarse. I moved to Fort Lauderdale about a year and a half ago from Pennsylvania because I had a lung condition, and the winters up there were just, like, horrible. I drug my husband and my 10-year-old daughter with me, and we've been here, and I absolutely hate it. I don't say all of Florida, but I just do not like South Florida. It's not a walker city. It doesn't have all the things that I'm used to, the people sitting in parks and talking to you and so forth. So I'm planning on moving again next year. And I'm doing most of my research online because I'm not going all the way back to the Northeast, maybe North Carolina, maybe Atlanta or something like that. But how do I not make the same mistakes that I made when moving here when now I have a daughter that I, wherever I go next, we're going to stay put at least until she finishes school. I just don't want to make the same decision, mistakes twice.
Melanie?
I think you pointed out a couple great factors. You're mm-hmm. recognizing a little why you haven't loved Fort Lauderdale. You mentioned you want a walkable community. You mentioned that you want a place where people talk to you, where you find people sitting around in the park. There was a study put out by the Knight Foundation called Soul of the Community. They spent 3 years studying what made people love their communities and feel attached to them. They studied 26 communities and surveyed 26,000 people. So this was a pretty extensive bit of research. And they came up with three factors that made people feel the happiest, the happiest in their town and the most likely to be attached to it. And they're kind of surprising. They're not necessarily, you know, good schools or responsive government or the things that we think of. They're kind of soft things. They were aesthetics or feeling like your town was beautiful, social offerings or feeling like your town was social, you had friends and there were things to do, and welcoming, feeling like your town was open and welcoming to all kinds of people. So when a town had those three factors going for it, people liked living there. One of the highest rated towns in their study was Grand Forks, North Dakota, which may be a place that you
I'm packing my bags.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to
Let's
Fargo.
Go. Yeah, you know, but it beat out cities like Charlotte on social offerings, which, you know, obviously if you compare them, I'm guessing that Charlotte has more museums and more, you know, stadiums and stuff like that than Grand Forks has. But it came down to people's perceptions of it. People who live in Grand Forks feel like it's a good community for them. So my advice for Barbara would be, you know, as you're looking at cities, look at those factors, those squishy factors. And they're hard to see right at first. If I could recommend anything, it would be give a city a trial run. Don't go buy a house. Go rent for a year. I know that's hard to do when you have a daughter and you don't want to keep uprooting her. But I love what you're thinking about already, which is thinking about a walkable community. Mm-hmm. When you drive to this town, you know, get out of your car. Do people say hi to you? Do they make eye contact? Those kinds of things go a long way toward me. Do that a little better than big cities. That it's a little easier to break in as a newbie, as a transplant, and feel like you're getting to know people and you're involved.
Do you recommend the small college towns like Blacksburg?
I love a small college town. You kind of get the best of both worlds. In my town of Blacksburg, we never have a commute anywhere of more than, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. My husband has a five-minute drive to work. Mm. But because it's a college town, we get a lot of arts and entertainment that we wouldn't otherwise get.
Concerts,
we have some great
things,
restaurants.
Yeah.
Right. And don't forget Hokie football.
Used to be the sports guys here in South Florida used to complain about having to get to Blacksburg when the Canes played the Hokies. They had, I think, three different flights to get into it.
Right. So that's definitely one of the downsides of where I live. We, you know, it's hard to catch a flight. We're 45 minutes from the nearest commercial airport, and it's a small airport, so it's a little expensive to go anywhere. But and when I first moved there, those kinds of things really bothered me. I felt isolated and like we were, you know, in the wilderness. It's in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's very lush and green and mountainy, but it also made me feel like I was in the middle of, you know, a grim fairy tale gone wrong. It felt like the evil forest or something.
But Melanie, think of the advantages. It may be more expensive to live in a town that doesn't have a big airport that's 45 minutes away, but think of the advantages to standing in that security line over a big airport.
Right, exactly.
And getting your luggage.
Well, in the quiet
in
the neighborhood.
When you have to fly out when you have to fly out of the Roanoke Airport, you know it's never going to take you more than 5 minutes to get through security.
Right.
So that's pretty great. But yeah, Blacksburg is a town that comes up on a lot of lists as a best place to raise a family. And I already said that I think those lists are mostly junky and probably not what you should base your life decisions on. But I have found that in this small town, it works really well for my family. You know, we lived there not very long, and we were seeing people we knew at the grocery store. And, you know, it's the kind of town where you run into people a lot, where people are friendly, and, you know, you see them on the sidewalk, they say hi.
I guess some people get a little too much of that, too.
Right. Some people hate that, you know. The woman who ran that study that I referred to, the Night Soul of the Community, is named Catherine Laughlin, and she lived in Miami, but she was originally from North Carolina, and so she was used to a social culture where if you're in the grocery store, you kind of just chat up people around you, you say hi. And in Miami, her friend said, "We don't do that here." You know, like, don't talk to people in the elevator. And, you know, that was really hard for her. So a lot of, you know, there's this concept of person-environment fit that is based on, you know, we all have personalities, and so do our places to some extent. And you're happiest if you can find a really good fit between your personality and your environment's personality. If you can connect those two things, you're going to do really well.
Okay, let's squeeze in another caller here. Juan's in Tamarack. Juan, go ahead. We're short on time.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. I wanted to comment on how I believe our U.S. society is very transient. It's my impression, and often we promote it. An example of that is employers tend to often push the idea of moving to other places, or even schools. When you graduate, the suggestions are, or as you're going through school, that you need to move if you want to be successful. And it's often not even thought twice. You know, if you have a family, that's okay. It's very normal. Everyone moves, and it's good to move. And the smart people move. The people who are successful move. So I see a lot more of less communication between people and more with devices. And I think that also lends to it. So that's my comment. And,
okay.
Okay,
thanks,
Juan,
for letting me share.
Okay, Melanie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think Juan is exactly right, mm-hmm. that there's kind of a sense that if you stay in your hometown, that there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't hack it other places. And upwardly mobile people do tend to move more often than other people. So I think definitely our culture creates this sense that if you're successful, or if you want to be successful, you're going to be on the move. You know, look at the U.S. military. That is how they run the military, is they uproot people every few years and move them around. So,
and just technology,
right.
Yeah. Anyway,
we're becoming more disconnected, definitely.
As we're supposed to be more connected. Melody Warnick, a journalist whose work has appeared in several publications, including Ladies Home Journal, Better Homes and Gardens, Red Book, the Oprah Magazine. Her book is This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live, filled with research. Melody Warnick, thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy Blacksburg.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to our callers, and thank you for tuning in this hour. Our lead producer, Richard Ives, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Polly Landis is associate producer. Again, thanks to Bonnie and our crew for extra work last week while I was away. It's very good to be back.
Very welcome.
We have free audio archives of this and other programs available free at our website, WLRN.org. More information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Bonnie, I wasn't sure about that.
Well, a little late in responding.
Tomorrow, we look into the theater, South Florida style, with longtime reviewer and columnist Christine Dolan, and acclaimed South Florida impresario, producer, and director Joseph Adler, who performs his voodoo at Gable Stage. 18 years.
I was just there yesterday. It's amazing.
Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.